Trigger warning, Death and Friends is not a podcast for the light of heart. Many dark and serious subjects will come up. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey guys.
There's no time for a cold open, Nash.
What?
It's the Henry VIII episode. There's no goddamn time.
Okay, gee.
For us all, you might as well make it your friend.
Your friend
with us on Death and Friends.
Welcome back, Skeleton Army. I'm Angel, and this beanie with googly eyes is Nash.
We didn't have time for a cold open, but we had time for this.
To be fair, your cold opens usually run 5 to 8 pages long. Okay, fine, pout. See if I give a shit. All right. Guess I have to paint the picture myself.
No, it's okay. I can do it.
Of course. Paint away.
I understand what you're doing, by the way.
I won one. Hell yeah.
Oh, that's my boy.
Oh, okay. So that's great. Can we...
sorry. Okay. Hang on. Go on.
I'm only letting you get away with this because I'm excited that we're finally doing this episode. You guys, we're finally talking about him. King Bay.
The babe with the power.
The power of voodoo.
Voodoo?
This went on too long for a reference that no one is going to understand.
First of all, everyone on Earth has seen Labyrinth, so.
You don't know that.
I do, for two reasons. Jennifer Connelly and David Bowie's pants.
There's no time for this.
Okay, fine, be boring.
Today, we're talking about the king whose nutsack changed the world forever.
Jesus Christ, Nash.
Yes. It's 1509, and we're solidly in the Tudor period in England, and a 17-year-old Henry has just ascended to the throne.
For context, wait. Have we? Hang on, let me double check my notes here.
Mm-hmm.
We've never been in the 16th century before, have we?
No, there's a first time for everything, apparently.
Wow. Even getting married. Ominous music.
Did you just say ominous music?
Yes, but it was in like a, you know, like a thing for Dom. Dom?
Thank you, Dom.
Oh, somebody's in the mood today.
Guess he woke up on the wrong side of the afterlife. Real funny.
You all done?
Okay, where were...
Jake!
I'm handling it, guys.
Wow, you guys ran to daddy.
How are you talking inside my head right now?
It's a ghost superpower.
You know, I don't love this color on you, Dom.
Yeah, well, I don't love being transparent.
Okay. Noted. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Jeez.
Guys, let's just all be nice. Please.
I will if he will.
Ooh.
I'm choosing to take that as a yes.
Okay, so back to our boy Henry. If you know one thing about him, you know that there's a nice little rhyme that helps you remember all of his wives. And that rhyme goes a little something like this. Divorce, beheaded, died, divorce, beheaded, survived.
Just like they say about all modern marriages, about 50% of Henry's ended death. A true man of the people.
Nope, that's not even a saying. No one says that. I don't know.
Oh man, you're right, sorry. 100% of marriages end in death. Duh, Nash.
Okay, all right.
Actually, let's back up just a little bit and set the stage. So Henry VIII is born in 1491 to Henry VII and Elizabeth of York.
Okay, heads up. Gonna be a lot of recycled names here, so we're gonna do what we can with that. But in the future, England, buddy, mate.
Yeah, bruv.
You guys could just sort your shit out with the goddamn names thing. That would be so much appreciated.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
In case you think we're being dramatic, Henry VIII famously had 6 wives. 3 of them called Catherine. That's a 50% Catherine rate for those of you keeping score at home.
And of that 50%, 66% of those wives were called Anne. So,
just,
you know,
yep.
I just like the idea of him being like, Catherine. And they're like, I'm Anne. Whatever. Like, whatever.
He's just we knew we were going to land on it eventually.
Yeah, he's like, who gives a shit? Like,
I got to get these bitches name tags.
Yeah, exactly.
And he could just recycle them after one wife dies. The next one just takes...
He's being eco-friendly.
Yeah, he's really thinking about the environment. Thank you, Henry VIII, the true champion of the people.
We love an environmentally conscious king.
And he was 6'2", so...
Was he really?
Yeah, tall guy energy.
Oh, this explains so much, to be honest.
Right? Doesn't it?
Jesus Christ. The calves alone. All right, moving on.
We had to make the Henry VIII episodes actually a two-parter for the sole reason that we keep having to remind you which wife we mean.
One for each calf. No. Or king, or other randomly involved side characters. It's like trying to dictate the Targaryen dynasty, you know, before it got bad.
Yeah, with pretty much exactly the same rate of incest.
Hey, how you doing? Hey. Monarchies are the same everywhere, Nash, even in fiction.
Anywho, Henry VIII is the third kid to Henry VII and his wife. His older brother, Arthur, is the heir presumptive, so he gets all the good training and tutors so that he can become king.
But then, wait, what is that? Is that foreshadowing piano I hear?
Foreshadowing music.
So after a bunch of negotiating with Spain, Dad Henry betroths Arthur to the young and lovely Catherine of Aragon, then 14.
Okay. Feels gross you saying young and lovely. Catherine
It does feel gross.
Catherine is the daughter of Isabel and Ferdinand II, and obviously a third cousin of English King Henry. Basically, a nepo baby.
She actually has a stronger claim to the English throne than Henry himself, since Henry's dad...
Hang on, which Henry?
I mean, sort of both, actually, but I'm talking about Henry VII. Anyway, his dad, Edmund, was just like an earl kind of guy. Just like a fucking... Earl.
Just, ugh. Disgusting. Yeah. Disgusting. I bet he was poor too.
Probably. Henry VII actually Robert Baratheoned his way onto the throne, taking it from Richard III in the War of the Roses, and beginning the Tudor dynasty.
Someday, maybe, we will cover all that white nonsense. But today is not that day. So, Arthur and Catherine marry in 1501, and it's going swimmingly. Until Arthur doesn't die in 1502... Maybe of the sweating sickness.
Did you say sweating sickness? That sounds fun.
Spontaneous combustion. Dying comes in after death, comes decomposition. It may seem sad and also gross, but here you are and here's your host, the natural doctor. It's medical.
Wait, what the fuck? What is what?
Suck it. Anyway, tangentially related to the Henry the Tudor dynasty comes the sweating sickness. It starts in 1485, maybe in August, at the end of War of the Roses. It's characterized by a sudden chill which turns to prominent, aggressive sweating, then followed by death. Physicians at the time attributed death to exhaustion or heart failure, usually from the onset of symptoms to death, only a few hours, but always less than a day, which is terrifying, and yet for viruses, somewhat admirable. If you got it and recovered, bad news, you can get it again and die. Having it apparently did not give you a leg up on getting it again or not getting it again. The disease is last recorded in 1551, and after that, it completely disappears. There have been no confirmed cases since then, and we don't actually even know what this disease really is. History's mysteries, baby.
Neither was fun nor really relevant, but, thanks? I'll take my coat back now.
No. I like it. I'm gonna keep it.
How dare you.
So with Arthur dead, Catherine goes from princess to widow, like, super quick. Like, she's like the Usain Bolt of widowhood.
Jesus Christ, Nash.
Precisely.
I'm already two in.
Henry VII is like, well, fuck. Now what? I have this girl living here and I gotta make my second son Henry the prince. I've spent years training the first kid to be king and sort of forgot about this other one, so hopefully he's doing okay.
As it so happens, he is doing great.
Oh.
All the histories and records about young Henry VIII are like, oh, he's so handsome, he's so talented, he's so smart. He's over there talking to members of Mensa. He landed on the moon. One time he wore army pants and flip-flops, so I bought army pants and flip-flops.
Are you good, buddy?
No.
That's fair, actually.
So Henry VIII gets the big promotion, and then King Daddy Henry is like, okay, maybe you can marry Catherine? Nah, because she's just kinda, and then he gestures at just anything, and he's like, she's just here. She's just here. I don't know what to do.
Lucky for Daddy, Henry's like, yeah, all right. He's 11, and Catherine, by all accounts, is good-looking at 14. Apparently, her mom is also cool with it, and in 1503, the couple get officially betrothed, which is like a pre-marriagey kind of nonsense that only rich, politically important people get to do to their own children.
Oh, they still do it. They're called promise rings. Disgusting. However, because rich white people can just marry their children together for political alliances without being a total international clusterfuck, Henry VII, aka Big Tudor Daddy, Jesus Christ, starts shopping around a little. Catherine's mom, Isabella, dies, and Ferdinand doesn't have the cool political power anymore. And Henry is like, okay, what if I maybe married my son to the new emerging powers in Castile?
While all that dumb shit is going on, Catherine's just still living in England. Just...
Hang on. She's from Spain, right?
Sí.
Oh, so she's just there like, ay, paella, necesito paella. Yo soy de España y no sé lo que está pasando. Hablo con este acento ridículo. ¿Qué voy a hacer?
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
No, Nash. No.
Vos otros, Taco Bell.
God damn it.
She's not really important enough anymore to merit power or even money, but Henry VII is keeping her around because only half her dowry has been paid, and he really is jonesing for that second half. But Ferdinand is reluctant to pay it because Catherine and Henry aren't married yet, which, yes, fair.
And of course, what's a child marriage without the Pope being involved? Because he is. It's kind of in the Bible that you shouldn't marry your brother's widow, and so in order to get that in the, you know, all clear, Ferdinand and Isabella and Henry VII have to reach out and be like, look, it's fine. It's fine, because Catherine and Arthur, they never consummated the marriage. They never did the bajinjo, never touched the bajimbus. Mm-hmm. There was no touching of butts. It's all good. Everything's great. He wouldn't even know what to do if he got down there. And even though Arthur ran around the castle being like, I just had sex. The worst part is he was also like, I'm really good at it, by the way. I was great. She was great. I was great. Everything was great. My penis works.
It admittedly sounds like a lie. So
it was great. Catherine, for her part, is pretty religious. And is like, we never did the thing. Except she did it in Spanish. So he's like, no, nunca hicimos eso. He tried, but you know how that incest stick goes like, am I right?
The Pope finally relents, because obviously he does. And he's like, I took another quick look at the Bible over the weekend in between coke and hooker sessions. And guess what? It says that marrying your brother's widow is okay as long as they didn't consummate their marriage. Phew.
That's a direct quote. Yeah. Leviticus 4:20. It is cool to fuck your brother's widow as long as he couldn't get it up. Amen.
CBS bangers. Something, something, something. We got to skip a little bit of time here. But the synopsis is Catherine has a rough time. She's stuck between Henry VII, who's kind of a dick, and is waiting on the second installment of Catherine's dowry, while also trying to score a better marriage behind her family's back. And her now solo dad, Ferdinand, who's having political problems of his own and who won't pay the dowry, rightfully, until the marriage actually happens. He also refuses to pay for Catherine's living expenses in England because Henry is supposed to be doing that. But he's been withholding because A, he's a dick. Aforementioned, and B, shockingly, he's a dick.
He's a dick two times. It gets so bad for Catherine at several points that she is unable to pay her household staff for months at a time. A lot of them, kudos to them, stick it out with her, but a few don't, and even after they left her, whenever she gets funds again, she is sure to give back pay, because for a rich lady, pretty cool.
Yeah. But finally, in 1509, Henry VII dies of tuberculosis.
Yeah, he was on the Oregon Trail.
Painfully and prolonged.
Ah, yes. Good old consumption.
Tasty.
Mmm.
According to some accounts, while on his deathbed, Henry VII felt kind of bad about how he treated Catherine for her, like, whole stay in England so far. And he was like, son, do the right thing and marry her. Which, like, wow.
Probably the right thing would be to let her go home after giving her a ton of money.
And a high five or something.
A righteous fist bump full of cash.
But no, a marriage Henry VIII wants and a marriage he gets. On the 11th of June, 1509, he and Catherine do the thing in a private ceremony. And probably unsurprisingly, Henry doesn't run around the castle the next morning screaming about how great his dick is.
But apparently, pretty great. Because by November the same year, baby girl is pregnant. Mm. And Henry is all like, your dynasty secured, baby. How you doing? This is how Henry VIII sounds.
Why did I say after you said
I don't know,
pregnant?
But you're fucking gross.
Yeah. That's not the react. So it's a pretty big bummer for everyone when she delivers a stillborn daughter in January 1510. She blames herself, which is pretty much the standard of the day. Thank you, patriarchy. But she's pregnant again by February, which, for those of you doing the math at home, is 1 month later. Delightfully, also around the same time, Henry starts sticking his dick in other ladies, too, because he's a man and a king. So, like, cool.
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 Yeah, what a time to be a white man. I mean, you know, like any other time in history, literally. Just, you can just do
all
that.
The times.
Just, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The reign of the white man.
Must be nice!
Catherine gets pregnant again in 1510 and delivers a son on New Year's Day in 1511. Want to guess what they name him?
Oh, is this the birth of Prince Charles?
Surprise! They call this kid Henry because they could think of zero other names.
They look through all the baby names. They're like, nah, fool. There's only this one name, dog. Other names? Nah. Nah, never heard of him, dog. Nah. I guess Henry the Eighth was really Henry the Ocho. We just never knew.
Unfortunately, tiny baby Henry dies at 6 weeks old, which bums everyone out and stops all the celebrations.
Way to go, stupid baby.
Catherine suffers more baby losses over the years. In February 1516, though, in her fifth confirmed pregnancy, Catherine delivers a healthy baby girl whom she calls Mary. She's got the wrong parts for kingdom security, but everyone's a little relieved for a while, at least.
They're like, all right, we got good news, and we got bad news. Good news, the baby made it. Yes, finally. It's very healthy, everything's great. All right, awesome. What's the name of my son? Mary. I'm sorry, what? And he's missing a penis. What? It's a girl. Then in 1518, Catherine gets pregnant again at 32 years old.
And everyone is like, God damn, a 32-year-old pregnant lady. Oh my God, a miracle of science. How does one lady so very old and ancient and made of dust get pregnant with a baby?
I often say similar things about Nash.
And yes.
And that baby, a girl, dies a few hours after birth. And Catherine stops conceiving after this. And according to the king himself, they pretty much stop doing the business, that's in quotation marks, after that. The king starts getting really worried about what's going to happen if he doesn't have a male heir, since there had been no lady king?
Ugh.
Ugh. Gross. As of yet, he only has a daughter.
Don't forget, Henry's dead. Other Henry.
Dead Henry.
The before Henry did a little throne usurping. And some people, i.e. the people that he did the usurping from, are still just like in England, hanging around. And they haven't been particularly vocal or even active in Henry VIII's time, but given a little power vacuum opportunity, they might not say no to a little shakeup, which would put baby Mary's life in danger and threaten Henry VIII's lasting, important, rich white guy legacy.
So he does what anyone would do in that situation.
Discontinue the monarchy and establish people-led governance.
What? No.
Adopt a baby boy in need of a family and teach him to rule.
Again, no.
Build a large wooden horse and fill
it. He fucks some other ladies, Nash.
Oh.
Yeah, come on, bud. What are you doing?
I guess that makes sense.
He knocks up a relative of the Queen's Chamberlain, a woman! Or child, actually, since the affair starts when she's 14. Go ahead, Nash. I know it's killing you.
Who does he think he is? Dane Cook?
Thanks for your contribution to comedy, as always, Nash. In 1519, Elizabeth Blount gives birth to the son of a king. A baby, they call. Come on. Everyone together now.
Henry!
The boy gets a royal appointment and some royal tutors, but Henry never fully claims him and declares him heir. He's after a bigger prize. A better, more legitimate baby boy.
Ugh.
And there's only one way to get that.
It's 1524, and it's time to fight a pope.
Henry!
In 1524, Henry is getting nervous about his succession. His wife is clearly barren and in menopause now.
Which is very gross and icky. Like, how dare she, honestly?
It's like old lady cooties. Ugh. Just so disrespectful. And Henry is worried about how England would take him legitimizing his bastard child, and whether the pope would even approve of that. And also, most importantly, he is not in love with his gross old wife woman anymore.
No. He'd been fucking Catherine's lady-in-waiting Mary for a hot minute, but that's off now. And Henry finally is in love again. Who's the girl, you might ask?
Weird that he's been fucking a girl with the same name as his daughter, to be honest.
It's Tudor England, Angel. There's only two names.
Oh, right. So the girl he's in love with is Mary, or new Catherine.
Oh, okay. So there's three names, I guess, because baby boy has his heart set on Anne Boleyn.
Ooh, but Anne isn't just fucking around like her sister. She's like, look, pal, I am not side chick material. You want this, you gotta put a ring on it.
Is she also William Shatner?
Yeah, I was going for Sasha Banks from Boston, but sure.
Oh, okay. Say what you want about Anne, but that girl was playing chess. She didn't play it well, but damn, did she commit.
She's like, and now this is checkmate. This, we're playing tic-tac-toe. I don't know what you're talking about. And thus begins the fucking around portion of today's show, which, if you've been watching us live, you recognize we've been fucking around this whole time. Henry has his heart set on serving some horse divorce before lunch, and when the Pope says no, Henry's like, look, I married my brother's widow, okay? That's, like, totally forbidden in the Bible. So, like, you know.
Which, wow, considering how they made the Pope tell them it was fine 2 decades ago, that's a pretty shitty thing to say. And Catherine is like, I didn't consummate that marriage, though. His dick wouldn't work. Do you remember I said that? And everyone in the room seems to have not heard her say that. Especially Henry, who at long last reveals the secret, overtired, yet sugar-laden toddler that he really is inside.
Long story short, since everybody on Earth kind of knows this bit, Henry declares Rome useless after Pope Clement VII kind of dicks around deciding whether he's going to support Henry or Catherine's nephew, who at that point is the Holy Roman Emperor, and who just kicked Pope Clement VII out of Rome and sent him into hiding. So
it's one of the few times in history that it's really uncool to be the Pope. All the other times are when Dan Brown publishes a book.
Henry listens to his two good friends, who we shall call the Thomases.
Otherwise known as Thomas Cromwell and Thomas Cranmer.
You know how, like, two actors look very much alike, and you're like, is that the lady from the thing? It's like, no, she wasn't the other thing. And you're like, yeah. Who gives a shit? It's kind of like that.
Yep.
Who cares, though? Because the Thomases are both Protestants, convince Henry that he shouldn't even have to listen to the Pope anyway. He's the goddamn king. And Henry's like, yeah. He turns to a New Yorker, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And he starts doing the thing. And he appoints one of the Thomases.
Cranmer.
Thank you. To be the archbishop. And immediately that Thomas.
Still Cranmer.
Whatever that Thomas grants Henry his cute little divorce. The Pope responds by excommunicating Henry. And he's like, okay, I don't care. I don't care, honestly. I'm about to have sex. And he marries the already knocked up Anne Boleyn in June 1533.
In 1534, he passes the Act of Supremacy, which is the final nail in the coffin in Catholicism in England. We're in the Reformation now, baby.
Woo!
It's everything Martin Luther wet dreamed over, which is kind of funny, actually, because Luther really wasn't that cool with Henry's divorce rationale. He was like, you could just have more wives because polygamy is, like, totally fine in the Bible. Divorce? No. Polygamy? Yes.
Yeah, that's a direct quote, by the way.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay, that's enough of the boring politics and stuff. I'm over you, this part of history. This has been our longest episode with no deaths so far.
I mean, that's not true.
Okay, but those were, like, sad baby deaths. Let's get rolling on the deaths. Rolling. Rolling. Get it?
No.
Rolling. Like, heads. Rolling.
I mean this genuinely. I am so worried about you.
Amusingly, ironically, almost scriptedly, Anne Boleyn, who constantly criticized Catherine for being unable to produce a male heir, does not give Henry a son. And now begins the finding out.
Yes. Anne gives birth to a daughter in September 1533, a girl they call... Oh my God. Jesus Christ. They name her Elizabeth?
Amazing. 3 cheers. 11 out of 10. Finally, a different name.
Okay. Well, she miscarries in 1534, and Henry is like, okay, this girl's like really opinionated and likes power. Like, what the fuck is this? She's not just happy being my wife?
Nope.
God damn it. What the hell?
It's almost like she was like that the whole time, but okay, bro, whatever. You divorced your old wife and had your firstborn declared illegitimate for this, so great job.
Killing it.
And it's not just Henry that's having feelings. Most of the court and a lot of the regular old people folk prefer Catherine because she was nice to them and she really seemed to care. Juxtaposed against Catherine, Anne is kind of a beehole.
What a line.
Yeah.
A beehole.
Trying to be nice.
In the meantime, religiously, things are... going pretty well, actually. But only because if you dared speak of the new Protestant thing, you're executed for treason.
Ouch. Things are quiet for a bit until January 1536, when Catherine dies of what we now know today as cancer, but what physicians at the time recorded as poisoning, because during her autopsy, they cut open her chest and her heart is black.
Hell yeah, brother!
Considering how many times Henry and Anne considered killing both Catherine and her daughter Mary, it's a little unsurprising that the autopsy was never made public, because the doctors were like, okay, so Henry and or Anne finally had the queen killed. But Henry's actually sort of sad about it, maybe, it's a little weird. But then he gets thrown from a horse during a sport thingy, and he gets hurt. And for a little bit, people are like, is the king going to get killed by a horse?
Not the first time a royal has been killed by something involving horses on this podcast.
Yes.
Anne learns about his fall the day of Catherine's funeral, and probably by the vengeful ghost of Catherine, she has a miscarriage. Hey.
Hey.
Shouldn't be so jokey about that, but it's getting comical at this point.
Yeah, no. Hey.
Hey, how you doing? Hey. Hey, you dropped the baby.
Yeah, this is our most dead babies to date.
Jesus Christ, it's getting dark.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Here's where shit really starts to go south for Anne. Now, that Catherine is dead, if Henry divorces or otherwise gets rid of Anne, he's free to marry whoever he likes. Beforehand, he would just sort of revert to the old marriage somehow. And the public generally blame Anne for Henry's new shitty laws and constant executions, because from the outside, it's kind of like, well, that didn't start till she showed up. After he recovers from losing a fight with a horse, he just starts casually wondering out loud if maybe Anne seduced him with witchcraft, because when you make bad decisions, the only choice is to blame witches. Everyone knows this.
Henry announces to the court that he's been taken in by a spooky, scary witch lady, and immediately moves one of Anne's ladies-in-waiting, Jane Seymour, into the royal quarters.
This dude and ladies-in-waiting, what the fuck?
I mean, they're just waiting. And also ladies. What else is he supposed to do?
So Henry, now in love with yet another girl and determined to make her queen slash have his male babies, decides it's time for Anne to go. And by go, he means down south.
Like Florida?
Ugh, not that bad. Just hell.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's not, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all right. Less humid.
He, or maybe one of the Thomases, the Cromwell variety, nobody's really sure, have a bunch of dudes, including her own brother, arrested for treason via having sex with the queen in order to produce a male heir. One of those dudes, thankfully not her brother, confesses, probably in order to get his freedom.
Then on May 2nd, 1536, Anne herself is arrested and imprisoned in the Tower of London. Her trial takes place on May 15th, in which they also conveniently add the charge of murdering Queen Catherine and attempting to murder her daughter. She is found guilty by all 26 jurors. Wow, very fair trial this is. The five men accused of Netflix and chilling with her are executed via beheading on May 17th, 1536, and Anne herself is beheaded on the 19th of May. And that brings us to...
Death, polio, spontaneous combustion. Dying comes and after death comes decomposition. It may seem sad and also gross, but here you are and here's your host. Not an actual doctor, but it's medical facts with Dr. A.
Hey, it's time for a little beheading talk. We've talked about this before, but that was way back in season one. And so here's a quick and fun refresher. Decapitation. It's been around forever, basically. And for as long as humans realized that they could kill each other. There are depictions of decapitations in the Narmer Palette in Egypt, and that's from around 3000 BCE. So, you know, you get it. It's been, you know, since we're pretty much able to be like, oh, we die? Somebody was like, what if we took the head off? It's a really efficient way of killing people, and it's also disrespecting corpses, but that's for another day. And probably something that will make Nash weirdly enthusiastic. Back to business. Death from a clean decapitation with a sharp blade takes very little time. You're unconscious from the lack of oxygen to the brain between 3 to 10 seconds, and brain death occurs between 3 and 6 minutes from, well, your head being cut off from the rest of the important bits of your body that typically do things, so.
Beautiful. What a description.
Thank you. That's why I earned this coat.
Oh, I thought you stole it from the basement, to be honest.
I earned it from the basement.
Yep. Yes, buddy. So our girl Anne gives a brief speech before she is executed, which she very carefully hints that she's innocent. It's bad form in Tudor England to still talk about being innocent after getting a guilty verdict. And then she's like, hey, I hope Henry has a real good reign, okay? Like, he was pretty nice to me, which at first glance seems weird because he's basically murdering her, but then you remember that she has a daughter, and she's probably really hoping to save her.
What happens?
The episode ends.
Ooh, ending on a cliffhanger.
I mean, probably just Google it, probably.
So...
Yeah. Did you know that cockroaches can survive being beheaded?
What the fuck?
Yeah, they die from starvation from not having a head.
So they can't survive a beheading?
No, I mean... Wait.
It's okay, bud. It's all right. It's okay. You okay?
And on that rude note, that's the episode. See you in a fortnight to finish our super wife-studded finale for season 4. A special thanks to you, our favorite listener. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. A rate and review would be really fucking rad, dude.
You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Gorilla Jokes.
And I'm at It's Nash Flynn.
You can also follow the podcast where we drop incredibly specific memes and unhinged selfies at Death and Friends Podcast.
Would you like to live deliciously? Become a member of the Skeleton Army and join us on Patreon. We use it to cover our sound guy's medical bills. In order to properly write medical facts, we expose Dom to all the illnesses and ways to die we talk about on the show.
What did we do this week?
I had him excommunicated.
Oh, I didn't know he was Catholic.
I mean, he isn't now, that's for sure.
Speaking of Patreon, it's time to honor a member, or on this one, members, at the Brendan Fraser level, or in this case, joining us at the live recording of this. Praise be Amelia. Praise be Colin. Praise be Lucienne. And praise be Kara.
And praise be Brendan
Fraser. I'm sorry, say that again?
Fraser. So check it out at patreon.com/deathandfriends. For more information, visit deathandfriends.org. Join us as we make the entire internet worse.
All right, everybody. Death is tricky to talk about. So please remember, you are loved, you matter. If you don't want to be your own friend, we will happily be your friend.
And I will never, ever betray you for one of your ladies in waiting. That I promise.
I've never heard you speak such a bold-faced lie.
I know.
Until next time, Skeleton Army, stay spooky. Love you.
Love you.
This has been a Knavery Inc. podcast. Go to knaveryinc.com for more details. Executive produced by Jacob Duffy Halbleib. Audio designed by Dominic Guanzon. Themes and transitions by Amy Doe.
The fuck is a knave?
So in 1533, Henry listens to his two good friends, who we will call... Who will we woo woo?
Mm-hmm.
Who woo woo woo?
Woo 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 woo. Death?
The Pope responds by excommunicating. Now my accent. The Pope responds by excommunicating Henry. And he's like, okay, man, I don't care. But I have sex in the...
Death?
She's found guilty by... It says, B-U-A-L... There it is. Okay.
It was a typo.
It's like, oh, blah.
We read what is exactly on the teleprompter.
This where it's a problem. Yeah. She is found guilty by
death. I do a lot of creepy reading.
Do you?
Like for that, not just well,
since
also
when? You spooky bitch.
Like honestly, if I ever get arrested, please delete my browser history because it's like, how long does it take you to die from stabbing? If
you
get stabbed in between
you
your like fourth and fifth rib, you know? How long does it take for blood loss?
It's true.
It's one of my favorite things.
She's a walking case of consumption.
Death?
What the fuck?
Yeah, they die from starvation from not having a head.
Thank you, Amelia. Thank you. We're not clearly in the middle of our outro.
No.
We're just teasing. I'm just teasing you. It's fine. Oh, this is for the recording. Emilia, who's the live studio on his business, just said, chickens can also survive. And I was like, okay, cool. Thanks.
Death?
What did we do this week?
I had a mex communicated.
You had a mex communicated?
Did I say mex?
You said mex. I was like, what does the hell is that? He can no longer go to Cabo San Lucas.
He cannot go to Mexican restaurants.
Yeah, he got a mex communicated.
We should have a mex communicated, to be honest with you.
Death?
My penis works.